This episode of the Outside Podcast is brought to you by the all-new 2024 Lexus GX. You ever pick up a piece of gear that inspired you to up your game? My first full suspension mountain bike was like this. So plush and fun, it changed riding a bike from something I thought I'd never forget how to do to something I realized I wanted to do better. The all-new Lexus GX is an exceptionally capable rig that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. With available dynamic sky panorama glass roof, front row massaging seats, and multi-terrain select, the all-new GX is rugged on the outside, refined on the inside. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer or go to lexus.com/GX to learn more. This is the Outside Podcast. You ever hear a podcast so good, you want to stand up and clap, both when it's over and at several points along the way? But you don't, because you're on a run, or on the bus, listening in earbuds, in your own little world. You ever get choked up in public at a weird moment to be emotional, like at the dog park, or waiting to get on a flight? If none of this describes you, I've got some listening to recommend. It's an Audible original called Alaska is the Center of the Universe, and the concept for the series is so simple and so good, I've sort of become its personal ambassador. If someone mentions any kind of connection to Alaska, I'll ask if they've heard it. If the conversation veers towards indigenous narratives or native stories, I'll bring it up. The series follows James Domick Jr., an artist, drummer, and storyteller from Alaska. He's Inupiaq. And he travels around talking to people from different tribes and villages, asking them to share their traditional stories, what they grew up with. A lot of them are about cryptids, magical, maybe mythical creatures like Bigfoot and the Kushtika, which are like shape-shifting otters who play deadly tricks on people out at sea. Then they talk about how that story is different than what he's heard before, or how it's similar to the stories he grew up with. That's it. It's a travel show about stories, and it's brilliant. James introduces the series better than I ever could, so I'll leave the rest of that to him. But if you like what you hear, you can find Alaska is the Center of the Universe on Audible. Here's James.
Long ago, before we the Inupiaq people had any songs or drums or singing, there was a young hunter who was walking through the tundra one fall day, when he noticed a big shadow that fell over him. He didn't know what it was from, but instinct took over. He notched an arrow into his bow, and he turned and shot at the huge shape in the sky above him. A dead eagle fell to his feet. The hunter took the eagle back to his house and hung the skin outside of his wall to dry. Later that fall, the hunter was walking in the same place when again a shadow fell over him. "I'm gonna shoot whatever it is up there," he said to himself. And again, he set his arrow into his bow. But this time when he aimed upward to shoot, he didn't. He saw something unbelievable. Two boys walking in the sky towards him. The hunter was dumbfounded. The boys picked him up by each arm and started walking in the air with him. They took him high in the sky, far away, all the way to the big mountains. As they got higher and higher, the hunter started to hear a sound. It was faint at first, but the closer they got to a cave at the top of the highest mountain, the louder the sound got. Right outside the cave, the sound became almost deafening. but the boys led the hunter inside. Inside the cave, there was an old woman lying on a bed. The deafening sound the hunter heard outside the cave was the sound of her heart beating. "My other son went out hunting," she said to the hunter, "and I don't know what happened to him." Then it suddenly came to the hunter. "These people are eagles. They're people right now, but they are really eagles. The eagle I shot was her son." The hunter confessed to the old woman. "It was me," he said. "I shot your son with my bow and arrow. I thought he was going to attack me. His skin is hanging outside of my house." The woman's heart got quieter. Her face became less pained. She was still sad, but at least she knew what had happened to her son. "Thank you for telling me," she said. In exchange, the eagle mother taught the hunter how to make a drum. And she taught him a song. It was our first song and our first drum. "This drum is meant to bring people together," she told the hunter. "And this is a song for celebrating life. The beat you're going to play on the drum is my heartbeat. Take this back to the people. Get them all together and have a big feast." The boys brought the hunter back through the air, all the way back to his home. They took the skin of their eagle brother and returned it to their mother. The next day, as instructed, the man brought the people all together for a big feast, and he played the song that the eagle mother had taught him. And the people sang and danced and celebrated life. I grew up hearing this story. I love it because I'm a drummer and a storyteller. My Inupiaq name is Millikrook. My English name is James Domic Jr. I've been a rock and roll drummer, a film PA, a voiceover actor, and lately I've been making podcasts. To me, the Eagle Mother story, or the story of our first drum, is really about the very first beat that we all ever hear is our mother's heartbeat. And it's also about celebrating life despite things being hard. Because life can get really hard up here in Alaska. It's a big, wild, strange place. It's dangerous, but it's also very beautiful. I was born and raised in Kotzebue, a village of about 3,000, just above the Arctic Circle on the Chukchi Sea. I grew up playing basketball and trying to skateboard on one of the only little patches of pavement at the airport. My dad worked there, he was a mechanic. And my mom sewed traditional fur parkies. She's an amazing skin sewer. She makes hats, fancy parkas, mittens, gloves, earrings. I was raised around fur and tools. I was also raised around stories. Storytelling is in my blood. I'm the great-grandson of Palangan, or Paul Monroe, a revered Inupiaq storyteller. My family and my people have been living in this part of the world for over 10,000 years. And before books, before TV, before the infinite scroll on your phone, we had someone who would just tell you a story for a long time. Since then, there's been a lot of changes that happened really fast. Western contact, colonization and all that came with it, climate change. But our stories are still here.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
Ang we kang laga kasaktakok. Hello, my name is Ethan Pettigrew. I am Unangak. My family comes from Nikolski on Umnak Island, and I lived in Atka for quite a few years and raised my children there.
So I got my buddy, Ethan Pettigrew, to tell a straight-up old-school story. This one's Unangan, from what outsiders call the Aleutian Islands.
Other people call us Aleut, but our true name is Unangak.
It's not about a cryptid, but it's about something that might seem like a cryptid if I just described it to you. You would think I was talking about a straight-up monster, A big hairy Volkswagen Beetle covered in teeth. A killing machine. Yeah, I'm talking about the bear. The symbol of Alaska. The symbol of the wild. So sit back, don't look at any screens, and buckle up.
We'll be right back.
Brought to you by Lexus. There are things you can own that do much more than their stated functions. Things like a professional-grade kitchen range or an aerodynamic carbon fiber bike. The truth is, exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. They push you to reach higher, to go farther. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. You don't buy it just for the life you have, but also for the life you want to have. Its exceptional capability will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed, making plans that were once outside your scope. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.
Long ago, there was a man and a woman who chose not to live in a village, but to live off on their own. And they had a Ulasoka house that they had built, and they lived in this house. And they ended up having two children with him. These children were just infants, little children yet. Every morning, it was his responsibility to go hunt. Then he would go out hunting. For a period of time, he would bring back food and meat, and life was pretty good for a while. But after a while, he kept coming home and there was nothing. There was no food, no seal, no sea lion, nothing. But fish even, nothing. What's going on? What did we do? Did we break a taboo? Have we broken one of our traditions? And they could not find anything that they have done that would break a tradition, because these people followed the rules. One day, she has to start crawling for food, and we use that expression for picking up clams, mussels, things on the beach. It was a good food source, but it was also considered in ancient days a lesser food source than the rich sea mammals we get in the ocean, if that makes sense. Day after day, this was happening, so she'd bring home, you know, chitons and things for her children to eat. And every day he'd return and there'd be nothing. She's out there, and every day it's getting harder and harder because she's depleting the food in their bay that she's in. And at some point, it becomes time that these children have to, she has nothing to feed them, and she starts boiling pieces of old clothing so they have something to chew on. They're starving to death. Sure enough, he goes out to hunt, and while he's out there hunting, she's on the beach looking for little pieces of food she can feed her children. And a chihuyaca lands on her shoulder. It's a song sparrow. In our culture, the song sparrow is this little bird that tells us lots of things. Like, there's an old lady in Atka that used to listen to chihuyacas tell her when there was earthquakes going to be, and boy, she knew them like that. So this little bird is notorious to us about telling us things, whether it's gossipy or whether it's truth. It just loves to tell humans things. And the song sparrow spoke to her, and he said, "Do you know where your husband is?" And she, "Yes, he's out hunting." "Oh, really?" "Yeah. And how much food does he bring home?" "Well, he's not had any luck. There's been no food lately. He's not been able to find. Tomorrow when he goes hunting, after he leaves, I want you to hike over to the other side of the island and just wait and watch. He's there. He goes there." "What are you talking about?" "No, listen to me. Go there and watch." She was bothered by this, and sure enough, evening comes, her husband returns, and he's got no food, nothing. She's really bothered. She doesn't tell him about the chihuyaca, and she's sitting there wondering all night long and stewing on this. What is that bird talking about? So the next morning comes, they do their morning ritual, and he prepares his kayak, and off he goes into the ocean to hunt. At that point, she gets her children and she hikes over the island. She comes to a downslope on the other side of the mountain. there's a little knoll area hidden, and she kind of stops there and lays her children down, and she stands and looks over the knoll, and sure enough, she's looking down at the beach, and she sees a ulasuch down there, a house. And she stays and she watches. And she watches. And then she thinks, I wonder who lives there. So she goes down and she scratches on the roof. This, we entered our houses through the roof and through a ladder. And a female voice, oh, hello. Please come down into my house. I have soup on. I'll feed you some food. Please, I don't have any visitors here usually. Please come in. And so she came down, and as she was going down the ladder, she's looking, and there's seal skins filled with fat and berries, and there's seal meat drying and sea lion drying. This house is dripping with oil, basically, on the floor. It's just rich with food. It's food everywhere. And she sits down to eat with this woman, and the wife then asks this lady, where do you get all this food? Do you live by yourself? I do live by myself, but I have a man. And he comes to me only in the daytime, though. And he brings me things for the daytime, and this is what he brings me. It's my man. We just don't live together. And the wife then becomes suspicious, like, oh, okay. So she finishes her meal, and then they do their goodbyes, and she leaves. And the lady says, please come back to visit me again. Oh, I definitely will. And the wife goes, and she waits then up in the knoll again, and she's watching with her babies there. Eventually, she sees an ikyak, a kayak, coming way out in the ocean, and it's getting closer and closer. She can't recognize it yet, but it's a man's boat. And this boat gets closer and closer, and she sees that it has a seal. It's pulling a seal with it on it. And it gets to the beach, and he steps onto the beach, and she recognizes by his posture that's her husband. He calls out, and sure enough, a woman comes out of the house, comes down, they greet each other. They pull the isuch up above the high water mark, and then they go into the house. He's there for quite a while. Then he leaves, gets in his boat, paddles away. The wife, meanwhile, grabs her children, and she hikes back home. She gets home, and she's home by the time the husband comes around in his ikyak. He's coming to the beach, and she goes and greets him at the beach. Did you get us some food today? No, I was hunting, but there's nothing out there again. There's nothing. I keep trying, but there's nothing. Okay. Now she realizes that this man is deceiving her. She knows now, but she doesn't let him know this. And so the next morning comes. He does his breathing in ceremony, brings her the water. She wishes him luck. Off he goes in his ikyak. He disappears from the bay. She grabs three bundles in the back of her house. And they're bundles of something brown, and they're wrapped just around like a blanket, kind of, but big and thick. And she has three of them, and she straps those onto her back, and then she grabs her two infants, and she then hikes back to the part of the island that she was, across over the mountain. She lays her babies down. Then she goes back down, and she scratches on the door. Come in, my friend again. Come in, come on. I got more food for you today. My man brought me food. Brought me a whole seal yesterday. I hope he brings something today too. And I'm so glad to share with you. Let's see. What can I feed you today? And it's a feast of food. She's just filling her with food. The mistress reached in to get a soup out of her skin. She had soup boiling in. And when she did that, the wife took her woman's knife, grabbed her by the head, and chops her head off. She puts her head into the soup pot with all that seal meat. We know all the good stuff sinks to the bottom. And the head sunk to the bottom. And she takes the body, and she takes a grass mat, and she wraps it up, and she puts it in the back of the house so that nobody will see it. Then she leaves, and she goes back to her children, and she waits, and she watches. Husband comes, and this time he's got a kawach, a sea lion he's pulling. And he starts calling out for her, his mistress, but she never comes out of the house. There's no answer. He's like, she must be in the hills picking roots or something, alugas or something. So then he goes to the house. And as he steps into the roof of the house, he gets this wonderful smell of seal meat coming up. Oh, she's not here, but she's made wonderful soup for me. I'm going to go eat, and then I'm going to head home. She's made sure I got a meal. That's wonderful. He sits down. He goes and gets a bowl, and then he gets this big ladle. And he gets up to get himself some soup. And he pours some liquid in it, but he wants some of the good heavy meat and bone, which is in the bottom. And so he takes his big ladle and lifts it up, and lo and behold, it's his mistress's head. He's immediately shocked, and he thinks enemies on the island. But could have been enemies on the island that took her head and severed it. He thought, oh my God, I got to get back home, because if they're on this part of the island, they're going to get to my wife and my children as well. And so he comes out of the house, and he's looking to see if there's anybody around or enemies, and he looks up the hillside, and he goes, what is that? And it was his wife standing there. And she reaches down, and she takes one of the bundles, and she unrolls it, and she takes her infant and lays it on that bundle, and she rolls that infant in that bundle and sets it aside, takes the other one, does the same thing, puts that infant in that bundle, rolls it back up. Two infants in a bundle. She takes the third bundle, whoosh, rolls it open, puts it on her back like a blanket and wraps herself in it. She drops to all fours, and at that point she starts walking up the hill on all fours, and her babies raise up from the laying position and they follow her on all fours. Those were our first bears. And so, it explains to us, first of all, well, we can't eat bear because they're humans transformed, but also why that bear, when it's skinned, looks like a human. But I think also explains that relationship we have with bears and their anger sometimes towards us, for good reason. Dirty guy cheated on her.
That's such a good story. I mean, how else would you make sense of a mother bear's anger? Like, what else would you be able to equate it to? Like, I've never seen anything so angry.
And she was angry, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
I always say that these stories, they're about making sense of the world, including how we got here.
We believe that the first beings on Earth were not really human, but were human-like and covered with hair, and that they fell from the sky. One was male and one was female. And as they fell to the earth, they landed in what is called the Islands of the Four Mountains today, which is the center of the Aleutians.
The Aleutians are the island chain that stretches west from Alaska out into the Pacific Ocean. That's where the Unungan people live. It's a place with big volcanoes, big waves, big ocean, not a lot of trees, but there's tall beach grass everywhere. And that's what broke the fall of the two hairy beings.
And as they arose from their fall and looked around, they realized they're the only beings on Earth, one being male, one being female. Eventually they mate, and they created the first human being, and he was different than his parents in that he had hair only on his head and a couple other areas. From then they made many more children, and that was our creation, and that's why we consider the Islands of the Four Mountains the center of our universe.
Ethan's current home is the center of the universe, but he actually wasn't born in the Aleutians.
In fact, I was born in Southeast Alaska.
Ethan's journey is one of return.
I am a product of the internment of World War II. And
can you talk a little bit about that? What do you mean by that?
So internment for the Unangak people in the 40s, Japan and America were at war, and Japanese planes had been spotted. They bombed Dutch Harbor. That caused the Americans to panic, I guess, and they rounded up all of our people in the Aleutians and transported all of our people down to Southeast Alaska and put us in internment camps down there.
Ethan's mother was among those rounded up. It was officially an evacuation, but it didn't seem like much care or thought was put into it. Most villagers were only allowed to bring one suitcase. U.S. servicemen burned the homes and the church in Atka to prevent the Japanese from using them. When the Onungans arrived at their new homes, which the U.S. called duration camps, it got worse. They were in southeast Alaska, far from their home, among the big, dark, wet trees and mountains, nothing like their island homes. They were put in abandoned canneries, a herring salting facility, rotting mines with no plumbing, no electricity.
And there was no heat, no food, no medicine. In some of our, you know, the village of Atka, a third of its population died in 4 years in those camps. Mostly children and mostly elders. The children death certificates just say cause of death, pain. We don't know really what, it was probably disease, of course. Things were not sanitary, it was bad. People had to, in some camps, they had to take turns. Families were too large to sleep in one small area that they had blanketed off in an abandoned cannery, no heat. So they had to actually take turns sleeping for the night. Things like that. I think we were people that felt like we had no control.
Ethan still remembers what his grandmother told him about that time.
My grandmother said, I felt like we had no future because the babies were dying. And I felt like all our grandparents' parents were dying off. There was no past even. It's like we were being erased. I was like, wow, that's a, when you think about it, it's got to, that's why that generation doesn't even like talk about it. They just would cry and, yeah. We were removed from our homeland. It broke our families apart. Many of us were left behind in southeast. For instance, my grandmother got tuberculosis. She didn't die in the camp. Luckily, she got it towards the end. They put her in Tacoma Sanitarium, where she was for 9 years, came out with half a lung and almost deaf totally, but survived. And then rounded up her kids. It was just a horrendous experience for us.
Bad as it was, Ethan still wants people to know about it.
I think that the hardest thing is to be told by Americans that it's not true. And we've been told that over and over by different people. We were, a group of us from Atka went to New York to perform our tradition dances at the Museum of American Indian on Bowling Green. And at the end, we told about the internment, and an older lady stood up, and she was so angry with me. She said, you're lying. You're lying. It's not true. Our government would never do that to any of its people. And yes, it's true. It's in the Library of Congress. It's documented. This was our own country doing it to us. We were not at war with this country. We were citizens of this country. That's the amazing part of it. Who really is the enemy here? I think they're more cryptid than they are cryptids, actually.
It is really spooky. It does feel a little more scary because it is real.
I'll never say that cryptids aren't real. That Bigfoot, the little people, the Kushtika don't exist. But you're also not going to find them in the Library of Congress. And yet, if you told a story about what happened to the Onungan, it would almost feel fictional.
Like, they're really people that are
evil.
Trying to, like, change your reality. It's scary as hell.
It is.
And yet, despite everything that's trying to change our reality, we're still here.
That's James Domick Jr. from the Audible original Alaska is the Center of the Universe. Alaska is the Center of the Universe was created, produced, and written by James, with Isaac Kestenbaum and Josie Holtzman. This episode combined parts of episodes 1 and 6. Find the whole series at audible.com. The Outside Podcast is made possible by our Outside Plus members. Learn more about all the benefits of membership at outsideonline.com/podplus.